Hey, Allie, we're good to go.
All right.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major.
Okay. I graduated in the spring of 2011, and I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts in Musical Theater from the Boston Conservatory.
Awesome. So we will get to your history later.
Okay.
But for now, tell us about your current job. What do you do? Where do you do it?
So I currently am an account executive at Cox Refs, which is a company owned by Cox Media Group, which is a subsidiary of Cox Enterprises. And we sell ad time for national television commercials. So I currently have a sales list with them, and all of those ads you see on television for big clients, you know, car dealerships and fast food restaurants, we sell those commercials to be on the air.
Okay. Because I'm trying to figure out how this works, because the commercials go on, ultimately it's the TV broadcasters, right, who broadcast programs to track viewers and then presumably
right.
get revenue. So do they sort of subcontract out or hire out the Cox Group to do this buying, selling?
Correct. So we are the middleman in between the advertising agencies and the television stations. So say that, you know, a client wants to put their ad on the air and we represent the national business for the television station in which they would like to air on. We sort of facilitate that buying and selling for this on behalf of the television station.
So in other words, you're selling the television station's time to the advertiser.
Correct.
Got it. And I'm sure this is well into your pitch, but I am curious because I had not been aware of Cox Media Group or even its role. And this is a genuine question, not rhetorical.
Sure.
Is like, you know, what benefit do television stations get working through Cox Media as opposed to selling directly?
Well, in a lot of ways, certain clients come out of specific agencies mm-hmm. that are not local for those television stations. So, you know, say that we represent a television station in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but that, you know, client comes out of an agency that's located in Atlanta. The advantage is that they have sellers in Atlanta, buyers and sellers in Atlanta, who facilitate those buys on their behalf. So we can do that selling locally. It is local for us. It's just not local for them. Does that make sense?
Okay, so it's products that have a national reach.
Right, exactly.
Got it. Can I ask, is Cox sort of the only player in this game, or are there competitors?
There are definitely competitors. Cox, I think, is probably the biggest dog in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I think we represent the most stations in the business, but Katz Media Group is also a big, probably our biggest competitor. And then also on the cable end, NCC Media pretty much handles all of the cable business. So we're the three big dogs in the industry.
Sure. And about how big is the Cox Media Group? You could give it in terms of, let's say, employees or revenue.
Sure. So in my particular office, mm-hmm. We have around 60 employees. In Cox Reps, just my subsidiary, we have about 600 employees across the country. And then Cox Enterprises, you know, which is the huge parent company, has about 60,000 employees worldwide.
Oh, wow. Got it. Now, you said your title is account executive.
Yes.
I've heard, let's say, that title apply to many different positions.
Sure.
So is this like a commission-based sales role that you're in?
Yes.
Okay, so, and you, it is commission-based. I don't ask about pay, but is the structure of your pay pure commission, or is it like a hybrid of base pay and quota and commission? Or
Exactly. So I make a percentage base pay and a percentage commission.
So about a 50-50?
Currently I make a higher percentage base pay, but that's because I am still under contract with my company, and so the terms of my contract change yearly.
Okay. You just said contract with your company, so are you a, quote, contractor who officially works for another place?
So I was a sales assistant with my company first, and
I'm sorry, your company is Cox Media.
Cox Media Group.
Mm-hmm.
Go on. So I was a sales assistant with my company first. I was a sales assistant for about 2.5 years, and then left to do the Starving Artist track for about 1.5 years, and then decided to go back to work full time after that period of time. So I was a sales assistant again for another 8 months, and then was promoted to an actual salesperson. So when I got my promotion back in June of 2016, it's the promotion within the company is a 3-year contract.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so I'm 2 years into my contract now, so if I wanted to move within the company, I would be breaking the laws of my contract.
Oh, wow. So the contract essentially locks you into that position for 3 years.
Sure. So I could leave to do something completely out of the business.
Right. We don't have indentured servitude anymore.
Right.
Oh, but it's also like probably a non-compete agreement, I'm guessing.
Exactly.
Got it. Oh, that makes sense. In terms of sales, because it sounds like this is a sales job.
Yes, definitely is.
And I'm curious in terms of, I've heard of sales jobs. One person talked about having a sales job where the product they sold was $79. And the question is, how many per hour? And other people where if they put together 2 deals in a year, they're happy.
So, oh, uh-huh.
You know, they're selling, you know, computer systems to enterprises or something.
Right, exactly.
So I'm curious, what are the size of the deals and about how many do you make in a year if you're willing to share what your quota is?
So it really depends on, it's different for everyone. You know, anyone's sales list could range from, you know, a couple million dollars to $10 million to some people in New York have $15 million lists. It just depends on sort of where in the country you are and the kind of accounts that you're dealing with. But, you know, a spot in commercial spot in Los Angeles is going to be 10 times as expensive as a commercial spot in Kansas City, Missouri. So it sort of varies between accounts, but, it could range anywhere from, you know, a couple million to a lot more than that.
And I'm sorry, you're saying that is your yearly quota?
Yes.
Got it. And roughly, if you wish, how big is a typical sale? And how often do you be like, all right, I made a sale?
We make sales every day, you know, all of the time. I'm currently getting and negotiating buys on behalf of these television stations. I mean, so like just today I got 14 sales.
Oh,
14
wow.
Buys okay. of commercial inventory.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So it's very frequent. We're selling all the time.
Okay, sure. No, I was curious because, again, some sales jobs, it's every month you get a sale and it makes you happy.
Sure.
And I heard a negotiation thing, how does that work in terms of do you all try to negotiate as high a price as possible, as low a price as possible, or like a real estate agent, are you just trying to make it happen?
So a little bit of trying to negotiate, you know, the highest rate as possible. And also, as getting as much of the business as possible. So it's kind of this fine line between you know, getting your television stations the rates that you think they deserve, mm-hmm. and getting your television station the percentage of the budget that client has that you think they deserve.
Okay, got it. How do you find your clients?
So we don't do a lot of pitching new business like you would if you were selling locally. But a lot of our clients are just clients that that work with the agency that, you know, are in our local area. So a lot of the clients are just clients that we've always had, or, you know, sometimes we'll pick up new things, but those will be because they come into the market and not necessarily that we've, you know, picked out that new business.
Got it. Got it. So I'm sort of curious, in terms of the sales process here, like, mm-hmm. could you take us from your own perspective?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Like, could you take us through a complete sales cycle? Like, yeah, you know, how long does it go, what happens and all that?
Absolutely. So a lot of our clients place their buys annually, which means they'll place them one time a year. And then we also have a number of clients who will place their buys quarterly, and they'll place, you know, four buys throughout the year. So how a typical negotiation would work is that we would be contacted from someone at an advertising agency about a client they had, mm-hmm. and they would give us information that we needed to know in order to take that to the station and say, hey, use this information to give us, you know, your best rates possible for your ad space. So that typical information includes, you know, the budget they have to spend in the market that we're working with, the Nielsen demographic that they're looking for, something called a cost per point, which is, you know, how much...
essentially cost per viewer, right? Because points,
yeah, cost per viewer, essentially. Yeah, that's a good comparison that we can use. And the dates in which they want to be on the air. So they give us that information. We spreadsheet all of that information, and we're able to pull our station's inventory list, and we put together this spreadsheet with all that information, and we send it to our television stations that we work with.
When you say we, do you mean your company or do you mean you?
Yeah, I mean, I personally do, but also that's what my company does.
Okay.
So then if it were me, then I would send that spreadsheet with all of that information to my national sales manager at the television station I'm working with, mm-hmm. and they would get with their sales team and come up with rates that they think are fair based on this information that we've been given from the agency. So we will get those rates back from our television stations. We will send those rates back to the advertising agency, and that's sort of step one of the sales negotiation process. So after we've sent that initial round of rates to the agency, our agency will then go look at all, you know, the entire market across the board and see how everyone's rates look, comparing everyone's rates. And also they will come up with their own ratings for all of the television product that we have on the air. So then if there's some sort of discrepancy in what the rating they come up with is and the rating that we think is fair, then that's where the real negotiation process begins, where I personally will go back and forth with the agency and say, you know, well, you are giving this program a 1 rating, but I believe that this program should get a 2 rating, and here's why, and give them all the information as to why I think that program should get a higher rating, because the higher rating we can get, the more we can charge for a spot in that program. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
So we'll go through that whole process for all of the station's inventory, where we sort of fight for their ratings. And then at that point, once there's an agreed upon rating that we're working with, then we'll go back to the television station and say, okay, here are the ratings that I've negotiated with the agency. What can you do in terms of rates? Is there any rates that need to be higher? Are there any rates that need to be lower? And then they will give us a new set of rates. And some rates won't change, and some will be raised, and some will be lowered. And then we will take that information back to the agency, and that's sort of step number two. Now, typically, most negotiations go to maybe three rounds. The third round is usually just a few tweaks here and there, and then the advertising agency will place their buys where every, sometimes not all stations, but, you know, most stations in the market will all get a buy for this client, and you hope that you've negotiated your buy well enough that your television station gets their fair share of the budget that the agency had to work with.
Gotcha. Can I ask, like, what's your hit rate approximately? Like, for, in other words, when an agency contacts you, say, hey, we're interested in running this, right?
Mm-hmm.
What fraction of the time does that turn into a deal? Is it like, you don't have to give me exact number, but I'm trying to, I could see this being 90% of the time you work something out. I could see it being 5% of the time you work something out.
So I would say it's rare that I do a negotiation and don't get, and my station doesn't make it onto the buy. So I would say 98% of the time, I'll end up getting a buy out of it. It's the percentage of what that budget is that's really a toss-up. So, you know, our stations could get 5% of that budget, or they could get 45% of that budget.
Got it. So it's more like the size of the sale as opposed to whether or not
yes.
it happens.
Exactly.
And to Kurt, you are in L.A., correct?
I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, you're in Atlanta. I knew that. Why did I? Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
You mentioned L.A. as an example, and I'm so used to people being in L.A.
Yeah.
But Atlanta's a large market.
Atlanta is a huge market. It's a top 10 market.
Gotcha. I'm going to ask the next question. As somebody who is a professor at Berklee College of Music and has no musical background at all.
Okay.
Which is, like, do you feel, I mean, obviously, like, I'm sure you've learned things working at your job, but were you like a TV or media person before it?
I was not. So my dad actually has worked in television sales at television stations my whole life. So when I first moved to Atlanta right after graduation in 2011 and needed a job, he gave my work professional resume to someone at my current company and said, hey, my daughter's moving to Atlanta and is looking for a job. You know, if you have any entry-level positions available, you know, give her a call. And so fortunately, I moved down here late July of 2011. I interviewed in mid-August and started at the beginning of September that same year.
That's terrific. And if I, where are you from?
I'm originally born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri.
Gotcha. So this was not, your father's not in Atlanta, but he knew people.
He they're sort of in Atlanta now. Okay. They moved to Atlanta in 2007, right after I graduated high school.
Okay.
And they've been in Birmingham, Alabama now for about 8 years, but they still own their house in Atlanta, so they'll come back and forth and visit and, you know.
Gotcha.
Birmingham and Atlanta are only about 2 hours away from each other, so it's a pretty easy commute back and forth on the weekends for them.
Nice.
So
let's see. I'm sure it varies a bit, or maybe it doesn't, but about how many hours a week do you work?
It sort of depends on the season, but it's a pretty typical 9-to-5, 40-hour a week job. You know, some weeks are busier than others and I'll have to work a few more hours, but it's never, you know, taking over my whole life sort of a situation.
Sure. So I'm getting the impression your job involves, yeah, as you say, putting together these spreadsheets about the packages and then some back and forth with the clients. Is that pretty much what your job entails? Or sometimes people are like, oh, and the rest, the other half of my time, I do this.
There is another half of my time. So, you know, we do these negotiations, and that's the real sales portion of the job. But then we also have to facilitate the buys once they are placed and exist. So, you know, it would, in a dream world, a client would place a spot buy on our television station, and everything would run perfectly as ordered, and nothing would happen, and everything would clear. And, you know, it would deliver all the points, the rating points that we needed it to, and we would wipe our hands and be done with it. But unfortunately, you know, that's not the world that we necessarily live in. The biggest culprit of that are, you know, breaking news coverage, you know, urgent weather updates, when sporting events go into overtime, or, you know, that sort of thing, then the programming on our television stations gets thrown off.
Sure.
Right? Because it doesn't run at the exact schedule that it was planned to run.
Right.
So when things like that happen, then we have to facilitate making up, you know, if spots were missed because a commercial break was missed because there was breaking news coverage or whatever that may be. We also run into situations where networks, broadcast networks, change their programming all the time. You know, a show gets canceled or a show gets picked up or, you know, a special is airing or, you know, whatever those cases may be, where we have to sort of figure out how to make our buy still work when those sort of hiccups come into play. So one half of my job is doing the actual sales part and, you know, negotiating those buys. The other half is facilitating those buys and keeping everyone happy, you know, throughout the time that the buy is running.
Got it. Yeah, that is, people often talk about that as account management.
Yeah.
Right. That was your title, right? So.
Account executive. Yeah, we also do a lot of account management type of work.
Got it. And all right. And just curious. So on a given day, like how many different accounts do you work on?
Ooh, I mean, there are some days that I'm working on the same account time and time again, but I would say that I probably have my hands on at least 20 different accounts a day.
Got it. Very cool. All right. So
yeah.
Another question I have for you to follow up is, you know, to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria is that you enjoy what you do. So
yeah.
I'm curious, like, what is it about, you know, being this account executive that you could either go as specific into your job or just stay in the field in general that you enjoy?
Yeah, so I do like the field in general for sure. I've always been interested in sales. I'm sure you can tell that I'm pretty extroverted. And so sales really lends itself to people who are people who want to talk on the phone and who want to take people out to lunch and who want to entertain. And that's really, you know, what's attractive about my job to me. And on top of that, I really love the company that I work for. I love Cox Reps and I love Cox Media Group, and they are incredible to their employees. And I also really love the team that I work with in Atlanta. I work with some really, really fantastic people. So even on the hard days or the bad days, you know, I've got a really, really strong support system around me to remind me that it's not all bad all the time.
Indeed, the quality of one's coworkers, I've seen that over and over, have a huge effect on somebody's happiness at a position.
Absolutely.
All right. Very good. So you enjoy the people and the interaction.
I do. Yes.
All right, cool. All right, so hey, let's take it back to 2011. We could go back further if need be. And I'm sort of curious, like, put us in your headspace as you were finishing up at BOCO, and, like, what was your plan? What were your...
I
was going to say, we'll take it sort of one step at a time from there to where you are now.
Sure. So I graduated in May of 2011, and I really didn't have a plan at that point. The things I knew were that I didn't want to move to New York. So,
full stop. Pretty much every music theater grad I've ever heard of went to move to New York. What made you not want to move there?
You know, I think I'm one of the few people who loves musical theater and doesn't love New York City. I think it's a wonderful place to visit. I love going there to see my friends and to see shows and all that good stuff. But the lifestyle is not one for me. You know, I grew up in rural Missouri and, you know, life was a little slower and we had lots of space. And that's sort of, and I grew up, you know, in a nice household with nice things. And, you know, I didn't want to live in a shoebox apartment and lose, you know, $50 every time I walked out my front door and ride a stinky subway. And, you know, there are a number of things about New York that weren't necessarily appealing to me. And on top of all that, I didn't feel, not that the program or the degree didn't make me feel ready, but I just personally wasn't ready to make that leap.
Okay.
So at that time, I didn't really have much of a plan, and my parents said, you know, well, why don't you move to Atlanta? It doesn't have to be forever, but just come here because it's a free place to live for now, and you can figure it out, and we'll support you, you know, until you can sort of land on your feet. Mm-hmm. So I moved to Atlanta in July that year, and then I went to a couple auditions almost immediately after being here, and also interviewed for my job and ended up getting my job and ended up booking a couple shows. And that's just sort of how it's progressed ever since.
That sounds pretty big, local shows, I assume, but that still sounds like a very full schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of really incredible regional theater in Atlanta that just continues to grow and grow and grow. We are getting more and more equity houses by the daily, it seems like. And so it's providing a lot of work for artists in the city, which is really amazing. And there's also, I'm sure as you've read, so much film and television happening in Atlanta now as well. In 2017, it was the number one city in the U.S. for movies to be filmed. You know, it outnumbered L.A. last year. So it has a lot of opportunities that it can provide for artists. Mm-hmm. I work full time, but I also perform when I can, and I'm also employed by a church, so I sing.
Right. Well, actually, get all into your relationship with that in a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So
back to 20, can I ask one question? Is that,
of course,
you were, like, as you were applying for this job, mm-hmm. you said it was like a sales assistant.
Yes.
I mean, was this essentially your life plan of you're going to get a day job, make some money, and then do some fit in some theater around that? Or was this like a change of direction from what you'd envisioned?
So I never envisioned that when I started as a sales assistant at my company, you know, 7 years ago this fall, that it would become a career. I just thought, you know, moving to Atlanta was temporary and working this full-time job was temporary, and I'm just going to save some money and I'm going to figure out what I want to do and where I want to go and who I want to be. Mm-hmm. But I never would have imagined then in 2011 that I would be where I am today.
Got it. So, and you said sales assistant, going into only a tiny fraction of the detail you went into in your current position, like, mm-hmm. how did the sales assistant role differ from what you're doing now?
So it's a lot more data entry type of stuff.
Okay.
The sales assistants don't actually do any selling. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, when we get those buys for those orders, the sales assistants input those buys, you
Got
know,
it.
That kind of stuff.
Sure. So, all right. So there you are. There's a sales assistant. I imagine working for Atlanta, that's paying decent enough money.
Yeah, enough money to, you know, live.
Yeah. Did you get your own place or were you staying?
I got a place with my sister. So my sister and I lived in an apartment together for almost 4 years.
Gotcha. And then I think you said you were working there for 2.5 years. Is that right?
Yes. So I was first a sales assistant for 2.5 years, and then I left for a little bit before coming back.
Yeah, tell us about that. What triggered you to leave, and then what brought you back?
So I was I had worked for 2.5 years, and I had started to get a little burnt out with, you know, the data entry stuff, and I ended up booking a show at the Center for Puppetry Arts in Midtown Atlanta, which is one of the most world-renowned puppetry theaters that exists.
Sorry, do you do puppetry, or was this like...
The role that I was cast in was not a puppet. I did not do any puppetry in the show, no.
Okay, but was it a musical theater role?
It was. It was a musical called 1001 Nights, A Love Story About Loving Stories. And it was written by Robert Lopez, the creator of Avenue Q and Book of Mormon and Frozen. And it was being workshopped with a buddy of his from college, who is a local Atlantan. So we actually did a couple Skype sessions and worked with Robert Lopez, and then he came down and worked with us some on the show, which was really tremendous.
Oh, very fun.
So when I booked that show, I got my schedule for that, and it was all daytime rehearsals and all daytime performances, which meant that it was a huge conflict with my full-time job. After going back and forth a little bit with my company about maybe taking a leave of absence or going part-time, I ultimately decided that the best decision for me at that time was to quit my job. And if I was ever going to try and be a starving artist, now was the time to try.
Sure.
So I finished that contract, and I ended up booking 2 more contracts back to back after that, which was really amazing. And I got a film and television agent, booked a couple commercials in Atlanta, which was really incredible. And also,
I'm sorry, when you say you did 3 contracts, like how long in duration are we talking?
So you're talking about like a month of rehearsal and then let's say a 6-week run. So 10 weeks, a contract is, you know, it can range anywhere from like 8 to 10 weeks in Atlanta. So I worked those 3 contracts back to back. I also picked up some teaching work on the side. I worked retail at a vintage clothing store in Atlanta and was just trying to, you know, make some money wherever I could. And I was happy, and that was nice for a while, but eventually, you know, the starving artist life is not a consistent one as far as paychecks are concerned.
Right. It sounded like you had 3 quick successes and then maybe it went a little dry.
Yeah. And I had a couple more contracts after that, but not contracts that were as well paying as the ones that I had just come off of. And so, you know, then the struggle hit and, you know, I started blowing through my savings and, you know, after a period of time, I just wasn't financially stable. And that wasn't good enough for me. And I so envy those who can thrive living a starving artist life. But I just knew that wasn't the trajectory that I wanted for my life. Sure. So I made the decision one day after calling my parents, begging them to buy me groceries because I couldn't afford my own groceries.
Oh no.
I was going to go back to work full time because having the financial stability of having a full time job was more worth it than having the flexibility to being a starving artist.
Gotcha.
So after 1.5 years, I called up my old boss and said, you know, hey, If you'll take me back, I would love to come back to work. And the position they had available, they got me back in.
Got it. And when did you return to the company? Is that was
It was September of 2015.
Got it. And I think you said it was about 8 months later you were promoted?
Yeah, so I was promoted July 4th of 2015, or 2016. So I just passed my two-year anniversary.
Very nice. How did that promotion happen? Was it just like surprise, or was it something you applied for? Or?
Oh, yeah. So when I came back as a sales assistant, I came back with the intentions of turning this into a career. I wasn't just going to come back to work full-time and just sort of coast. Mm-hmm. So I made it known pretty much in the week that I came back to all of the managers in my office that I, you know, was coming back to become an account executive. And then the first position that opened up, I still had to interview and still had to pitch. I put an entire PowerPoint presentation together. And I was, you know, going up against other candidates, but I ended up getting the job.
Either internal, external, or both?
Both.
Gotcha. Well, congratulations. That's not easy.
Thank you. No, it was not easy. I spent a lot of time working on that. So I was very proud.
That's great. And how did you, was there much of an adjustment to doing the account executive role, or did you feel like thoroughly prepared having done the other stuff?
I would say that I felt like 50% prepared, but there was still a lot of the account executive job that I was completely unfamiliar with that I had to learn. You know, as far as like the lingo and, you know, the maintenance, the more of the account manager side of it, I sort of felt really comfortable with. And then it was the sales side of it that I really had to focus on.
Sure, sure. Actually, a couple follow-ups should have asked earlier is, your office in general is based in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some sort of like regional coverage, right? Some region that your office is responsible for. How big's that region?
Primarily it's the southeastern region. So, you know, whatever that means to you, sort of,
I think,
you know, as north as North Carolina and as west as, you know, Missouri. But then we also have a handful of stations further out west and a handful of stations further up north. But I would say the majority is the southeastern region of the United States.
Gotcha. And maybe you missed, how many account executives are in your office?
Are there?
Yeah.
30.
Okay, good number.
Yeah. And that's just in my office, but there's Cox Reps offices in Boston, New York, L.A., Detroit, Chicago, Dallas.
Gotcha.
I think that
would be it. Gotcha. Very cool. All right. So let's move on to the third part of the interview. Three. You started to say a couple things before, but let's talk about what is your current relationship with, can I say, musical theater slash music slash dance?
Of course. So I still perform and take contracts when I want slash can.
Evening ones, I assume.
Yes. So actually, most of the theaters in Atlanta, with the exception of maybe, you know, two or three, all rehearse in the evenings and on the weekends, and that's also what the performance schedule looks like, right? Mm-hmm. With a couple exceptions. But I am about to start rehearsals for my 26th show in 7 years.
That's a good number.
All professional theater. Oh, yeah. All professional theater locally here in Atlanta.
Can I ask, do you have your equity card, or are you non-equity?
I am non-equity.
Okay.
I am a membership of the EMC program. Mm-hmm. And if I haven't already, I'm very close to accruing all of my points. So I'm sort of, you know, I don't really have any desire to join the union currently.
Okay.
So I'm sort of skating by until equity comes after me and says, you have to join.
Sure. Sorry if I cut you off earlier. You were talking about 26 shows.
Yeah, so I'm getting ready to start rehearsals for Titanic the Musical and at Serenbe Playhouse.
What role do you play?
I'm playing the role Caroline Neville in that musical, so that should be incredible. Yeah, we start rehearsals on Monday for that, so I'm very excited. It's site-specific theater, so it's all outdoors, and this theater company takes no prisoner and always does something very spectacular with their shows. They did the Miss Saigon a couple summers ago and landed a World War II helicopter fighter pilot in a field every single show. And so for this show, they're building the set on top of a lake, and part of the set will actually sink into the lake. And, you know, a number of cast members will actually be in the water.
Wow. That's fantastic.
It's going to be really incredible, I think.
Well, that's great. All right.
Yeah, so I do musicals quite often. And the great thing about having a full-time job and making a livable salary is that I can sort of pick and choose the passion projects that I want to work on instead of having to just take every contract because I need the paycheck, which is something that's really, really nice.
Actually,
could
I ask about that? Like, these contracts you do, are they typically paid or?
Oh, unpaid? Yeah. No, I have not worked an unpaid gig in Atlanta.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So they are all, you know, a professional regional, you know, stature. I still perform in musicals when I can and when I want to. And I'm also employed at a Catholic church in Atlanta as a soprano section leader and cantor. And so I sing for, you know, Sunday mass and weddings and funerals, and that is all paid as well.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this has got to be, between all that, let's say a nice chunk of income on top of your job.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, after being back at my job and being promoted and, you know, saving a lot of money for a little while, mm-hmm. I was able to buy my own place.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So, yeah, I own my condo now, and I will have been here for 2 years in July. And I have two adorable dogs who are wonderful. And, I'm definitely living, you know, stable and comfortable, which is the kind of life that I've always desired to live.
Great. So my next question for you is, let's say, I'm sure account executives have very diverse backgrounds.
Yeah.
But it's got to be a small minority who are musical theater people.
Yes, absolutely.
So, let's say, relative to if you'd gone, let's assume you would have gotten a bachelor's degree one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But relative to if you'd, you know, whatever, gone and gotten an English degree or something, is there anything you feel your BOCO experience did particularly well to prepare you to be an account executive?
I mean, absolutely. I think any person who goes into sales mm-hmm. is going to have gained a lot of experience from having a theater degree. Because a lot of your job is about acting, sort of. You know, when you're entertaining people at dinners or entertaining people at happy hours or at functions or entertaining people on the phone because you're trying to sell, you know, what your product and get them to buy what you need them to buy. And you sort of have to adapt and change and be a different person with everyone. So, in that aspect, I think that having a theater degree and having a theater background is incredibly useful in any kind of sales job.
Sure. All right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Let's turn that question around now.
Okay.
Because, you got that a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree.
Mm-hmm.
Musical theater. You went to BOCO knowing that that's what you were going to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, all that said, when you think back to your education, is there anything where you say, you know, hey, it would have been useful to have learned this while I was at BOCO, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that, like, the kind of things that come to mind, and I don't really think this is BOCO specific, I think this is just, you know, a lack of information taught at universities across the country, but it's, you know, life skills, like, you know, what involves getting a mortgage, you know, and the kinds of things like that, and how, you know, credit, how your credit is established and what credit is, and, you know, those kinds of life skills that you don't, no one teaches you how to do those things. You sort of have to figure it out for yourself.
Right. But you're not the first person to say that it would have been nice to have learned that.
Yeah. I mean, what is a 401k? How does it work? And how do you accrue retirement? And how, you know, all those kinds of things. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a fault of BOCOs, but I don't think that's taught generally anywhere.
Sure. Well, at least the goal of Berkeley and BOCO's part of it is to be a leader in a lot of things. So
yeah,
our MO isn't always to wait till everyone else does something first.
Yeah. And, you know, especially as artists, because, you know, that's a whole nother kind of financial responsibility, especially those who are living a starving artist life and have to do a tax return at the end, you know, every April with 10 1099s and 4 W-2s. You know, it just gets outrageous during tax season. And what can you write off? What can't you write off? You know, what kind of percentage can I get back on, you know, this? How much money do I need to be saving because taxes aren't being taken out of it? I mean, stuff like that, just general information would have been so helpful.
Sure, very fair.
Yeah.
All right, so next question I have for you is, I feel like you're somewhere around my 135th interview.
Wow.
Yeah. 9th BOCO person. Most have been Berkeley. But let's say relatively few of those have been sales or account executives.
Okay.
So point is, right, I don't know if you've looked on this website, otherberkeleyalumni.com, but it's all indexed by career.
Okay.
The people listening to this are the ones who are like, oh, account executive. Oh, she's in media. Hey, that seems kind of cool. Maybe I'll check this out. So one question I have for you is, let's say for somebody interested in being an account executive or maybe even working at TV, but let's even say account executive, do you have any specific advice for them?
I'm trying to think of my, you know, touch on my own personal experience, but honestly, if a career in, you know, media sales is something that you're interested in, then I guess my best advice would be to do as much research as possible, because it's a lot bigger industry than you would think of, and it has so many different avenues for you, for opportunity. But, I mean, you know, if you're going to go in to interview somewhere, I would say, you know, that BOCO and I, you know, assume Berkeley has sort of already set you up with the tools for success to interview anywhere for any job.
Very cool. And to broaden the question out, because it's kind of funny, you got on this career path not knowing at the time that it would be your career path.
Right.
Right. But it got you the experience that when you decided you wanted to do it, you very quickly moved your way up to your current position.
So absolutely.
That's terrific. A lot of recent grads may not have found that career path yet.
Sure.
And there's going to be people maybe in their last year, maybe even the occasional BOCO grad who musical theater person who doesn't want to move to New York and is going, oh no, what's going to happen now? So let's just say, like, people in their last year at Boca or Berkeley, or people who are yet haven't found that path, maybe they're doing the starving artist thing and sort of like with you, it's not working out great. For either or both those groups, what advice do you have?
I would say be true to yourself, because I had all of these ideas when I graduated about who I thought I was supposed to be based on, you know, my degree and, you know, what the expectations were for that and where we're supposed to be and what we're supposed to go and what we're supposed to do. But it really became about me when, you know, after I had had that year and a half as a starving artist and really did some soul searching, that it was just coming back to being true to who I was that made me want to go back to work full time and have a career, you know, other than, you know, just being, you know, a musical theater performer. So I think that's my best advice that I could give is, you know, don't be ashamed to be who you are and know what you want and own what you want. There's nothing wrong with that. And if, you know, the starving artist life is not one for you, know that there's a lot of artists out there who aren't living that life and are still artistically very fulfilled.
Gotcha. Well, that's great. I only have one last question for you, Allie.
Okay.
Which is, you have the mic. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything we missed?
I don't think so. I think we pretty much covered everything. I mean, yeah, I'm very happy in Atlanta. I'm very happy with my career. I'm very happy with the choices that I've made, you know, as far as my musical theater and singing careers go. And I think it's just important to remember that there are a lot of options out there, and don't feel like you're pigeonholed into one thing because that's what you're supposed to be. You know, just do whatever's right for you and it'll all work out.
All right. Well, hey, Allie, I'm glad you can make the time this evening. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too, Kevin. It's been great.
All right. Look for a message from me in the near future, and best of luck with that new show.
I will. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye now.
Have a good one.